That's quite a song. I'll go where you want me to go. Of course, one of the important things is that when we were singing there, that we would be what he wants us to be. That's the important part of the whole thing. Wherever we go or whatever we do, that we be what he wants us to be. It's a joy that I have to introduce our brother. Everybody here knows him, so he doesn't need an introduction. Good to have each of you home as I look out there and see you, and Jay and Don and Brian and our brother here and Ken. I see that our brothers are home, and that's always our hope and our prayers that they come home safely. And so as our brother has prepared to speak to us today, be kind to yourself and give him your prayerful and your careful attention. For I'm sure that he has a message that was placed upon his heart and mind to bring to us this morning. So I bring before you our brother and apostle, Blaine Ely.
Thank you, Hugh. It is good to be back with you and to see each one of you here today. We know when we go to Africa that there's something we always have to do, and that is to send the greetings of our brothers and sisters to you. And it is important that we do that, and they are serious about that, to send their greetings to you. But it's more than just their greetings. It's they are sending you their love, and they are sending you their prayers. They are concerned about you. So I would be amiss if I did not send you the greetings from my brothers and sisters in Africa, because they are very serious about that. We had a good trip that we went on to Africa. We had many blessings. And the Lord protected us. You know, in Africa, safety does not exist. I would be very surprised if there's a word for safety in Swahili. It just doesn't exist. And just to survive the roads is a blessing. And I know for me, it was difficult for me to learn to drive there, because I am so used to the streets here in America that are so wide, and they have... the lanes are wide, they have stripes, there's stripes on the side, and even on the side of the road where the stripe where the lane ends, you still have another 3 or 4 feet. There it's not like that. The lanes are narrow, there's no stripe down the middle, and in many places where you can come to the edge of the road, it just drops off. So if you go off that edge, you're very likely going to roll the vehicle. And what was difficult for me was oncoming traffic, because it seemed like we were just too close to him. And I know Brian, he really explained it to me where I could really understand. Because here when you pass a car in America, you are several feet away from it. Sometimes maybe a couple of yards or so or more. And there, you know, Brian said, you're not dealing in feet, you're dealing in inches. And that's how close you're coming to those cars, is inches. And I had a hard time with that, because I wanted to stay to the edge of the road. But the problem with the edge of the road was there is pedestrians everywhere. There's bicycles, wobbly bicycles. And if you get off that edge, you got big problems. So it was hard for me to get used to that, to pass in vehicles going 50 miles an hour and be that close to them. But that's what we deal with over there. And I hope you can understand that to come back again is a blessing from God. To just survive the roads. And I know in Tanzania, they've kind of got rid of the hot water heaters a lot of places. And they have a little shower head that is hooked up to electricity, and it actually heats the water as it comes out of the shower head. And it's really a fairly nice little concept when it works. And of course, everything in Africa is 240 volt. But we found that when we were turning on the little valve there to get the water to come out, we were getting shocked. And that's not a good thing. Be standing in water and get shocked with 240 volts. And you would think, well, that they would have some type of step-down transformer, you know, where it would be safe. I doubt if they have a step-down transformer. You're probably getting 240 volts standing in the shower. Brian, we had a refrigerator in one of the places. You think, well, that's a nice little perk. One of the hotels has a little refrigerator in it. Well, he reached in, he put a bottle of water in the freezer. And you know, it has a little kind of a metal tray around that little freezer. Well, he reached in. When he touched that metal piece, he got shocked. I can guarantee you that was 240 volts. Nothing is safe there. But we had many, many little blessings. One blessing we had was just on not getting rained on. And it rained, you know, it rained many times, but never when we were out to where we'd actually get wet. But there was three times when we could have got wet. But one time was at the baptism service in the Congo, and we'd finished our baptism service and walked up, and it started raining, and there was a house there, and we were able to go into that house and stay dry. And there was two other occasions, one in Kenya and one in Tanzania, and we were in some of our members' houses, and it was pouring down rain, literally pouring down rain. And we were finishing up our time in there, you know, talking to the people and praying and stuff. And it was time to walk out into that rain. And literally both times, it was a matter of seconds before we walked out that door that the rain stopped. Both times, we didn't get rained on. Little blessings. But I know the Lord is with us when we're there. And we must realize that he has to be there with us because there's many things that are just not safe. There's many problems in Africa, many temporal problems, many hardships that our people have to endure every day. You know, they have famines, and the people are very poor, and they struggle in many ways to deal with these things. And I know that you know, for us here in America, that things are bad right now. The economy's bad. People are losing jobs, and there's things that are bad. But some of these things that we've still never had to deal with things that they deal with on a daily basis. We were in a Masana in Tanzania, a very remote place, and we were in the leader's house. But before we had our church service, and that's kind of common. A lot of times we'll go in there and offer a prayer over the house and the family and stuff before we go to our church service. But when Brian and I, we kind of ducked down to go through the door, and we walked in there, and there's just wasps swarming everywhere. And, you know, we went over and sat down, and I mean, there's just hundreds of wasps swarming all over. And they had a thatched roof, and it had a vaulted ceiling. And we're looking at these wasps swarming everywhere, looking up at all of the nests up there. These wasps are living in this house. And Brian and I talked about it afterwards, and I said, well, there must have been hundreds of wasp nests in there. And Brian was sure there was 1,000. We didn't have time to count. But this is what these people are dealing with. This is what this family deals with every day of their life. When they walk into their home, they have wasps swarming around their head. We went to Rocher, another very remote place. And as we were driving there, we left the hotel. And just as soon as we got on the road, Michael broke this news to us. He warned us. He said, be careful of the food there. He said, the food's bad. He said, they use bad cooking oil. And he said, the last time we went there, everyone got sick. And of course, that's not, you know, that's not the thing you want to hear, especially as you're leaving to go to a place. But we got there, had our service, and afterwards we waited a couple hours for them to finish preparing the food, and they washed our hands literally in muddy water, and we ate the very minimum that we could, because Michael had warned us, but we still had to eat some of the food. And then as we were leaving, we drove past a little muddy pond there. And Michael said, well, that's where they get their water. That's their water supply. That's all the water supply they have. And the problem with this little muddy pond was it was full of cattle. So that's the water they use every day. That's all the water they have. And yes, we got sick. We got sick from that water. But that's what they have to deal with all the time. Some of their churches are not comfortable like this. Some of them don't have any ventilation. They're very hot and stuffy. When we were in Mombasa, they meet in schoolhouses. And that's fairly common over there, that they'll rent a schoolroom to have their church services. And we met there on Saturday, and it was pretty nice. There was nobody else around. But then we went there on Sunday again to have the services. Well, the problem on Sunday is that all the other churches have their services there also. And, of course, these classrooms are not confined like this. They're all open air on the sides. You can hear everything from everybody else. And it just happened to be that the classroom next to us was a Pentecostal church. The one below us was a Pentecostal church. And there were some others in that same area. So can you imagine trying to hold a church service in an atmosphere like that? I literally stood as close as I could to that congregation and shouted for an hour, trying to preach with all of this commotion that was going on. It was a terrible situation. And we're trying to get those people a better place to meet. But these are some of the things that they have to deal with on a daily basis. You know, death is so common over there. Several of our members died while we were over there. Michael's mother passed away while Brian was there. Brian just told me today that Elphus, the leader in Tanzania, that his mother just passed away. Where we stay there in Kisii along the little road, there's a funeral home. And almost every day that there's somebody there at that funeral home, a big group of people. Death is very common over there. Things they have to deal with on a daily basis. There's many encouraging things, though, about the trip. Our brother Moses had a baby boy. Moses and Nora had a baby boy. That's very important to him because this is his sixth child, and I think he would have probably kept trying until he had a baby boy, because the tradition in Africa is that when you're old, your youngest son takes care of you. And when you have no son, there's nobody to take care of you in your old age. So I know Moses has been disturbed about this, I'm sure. He didn't have a son. But he has a son now. I'm sure he is comforted with that. To see the dedication of so many of our members over there that in our priesthood and they work tirelessly for the gospel. They're very dedicated to serving the Lord. Brian and I were very impressed with a man in Congo. We noticed him the first day when I was preaching. There was a large crowd there, probably maybe 125 people. And I noticed this man sitting just about where Karen's sitting back there. And a big crowd of people, and they're all much closer together. But I for some reason, something stood out about him. And as I was preaching, and after the service, they come around, greeted us. You know, he was very dignified looking. He had a nice gray suit, and he stood up very, very straight and had a very pleasant expression on his face. I don't know how to explain it, but he had a very pleasant expression. And it ended up being he was one of the people that we baptized the next day. His name's Philip, and he's a doctor there in the Congo. But he was there was just something different about him. One thing we noticed was after the baptism service, we had to walk back maybe a mile because it rained to catch the taxi. And his wife was up ahead of us carrying the baby. And here comes the doctor. I mean, he's hustling up there. And he gets up there and he takes that baby and he carries that baby the whole way. And that's pretty much unheard of in Africa. I've never seen that before because the women take care of the children. But there's something different about him. I don't know what it is. You know, maybe he'll be the one to be called into the ministry. I don't know, but there was just something encouraging about this man and the pleasant expression he had on his face. We in Masaba, which is a little town just on the coast there, or not on the coast, but on the border between Tanzania and Kenya. We met with a group of people there, about 25 people, that are very interested in the Church of Christ. And there's another group just like that, just a few miles from there. But these people, none of them are members of the Church of Christ. Michael has met with them a couple times and spent several days there meeting with them. But these people acted just like the Church of Christ. They even have a building they've almost completed. They've got the stick walls up and part of the sheeting on the roof. They act like the Church of Christ. Very interested. I'm sure in the next few months we will have a congregation there. So we see some places where the work is growing. But one thing they're desperately in need of there in Africa is ministry. Especially in Tanzania and Congo and Nigeria and also India, but those countries have no ministry. And Tanzania has a lot of congregations, but still no ministry. So I would encourage each one of you, you know, in your daily prayers to pray for these people and to pray for the calling of ministry, because they definitely stand in need. You know, as I was flying there, you fly over the Sahara Desert. And the Sahara Desert is about the size of the United States. It's a massive desert. It's about 1,000 miles wide by 3,200 miles long. And as you are flying over this desert, you see nothing but brown. It is dry. It is barren. It looks like a wasteland. You see nothing growing, nothing alive. You see no sign of life. You don't see a tree. You don't see a bush. You don't see anything. It really looks like the surface of the moon. And then as we were flying along, you know, in the airplane, they have a map up there that shows where you're at. And I looked up there, and it showed we were flying over the Nile River. So I quickly opened the window and looked out. And sure enough, there's the Nile River right below me. And all of a sudden, this desert that was dead and barren and dry came to life. Came to life. There was fertile green fields next to this river. We flew over the city of Khartoum, a large city supported by this river. It was the lifeblood of this Sahara Desert. Also, when we were in Cairo, the Nile River flows right through Cairo. And without that Nile River, Cairo would not exist. I think Cairo is one of the largest cities in Africa. But without this Nile River, it would not exist because it is part of that dry, barren wasteland. But you know, I thought of what a good example that was to us in our spiritual lives, that our life truly is a barren wasteland without Jesus Christ. We are like that surface of the moon. Have no life in us. That this Jesus Christ truly is the living waters. And without Him, we are nothing. Without Jesus Christ, we are nothing. Let's turn over to John chapter 4. Verses 9 through 14. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, Give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. The woman saith unto him, Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well, and drank thereof himself, and his children, and his cattle? Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water, springing up into everlasting life. We know that the water we drink from a glass, that when we drink that we will thirst again, won't we? After a short period of time, we will be thirsty again. But not the same way with this spiritual water, this living water of having Jesus Christ in our life. We know that this is eternal and everlasting. It is what we must have for salvation. And so many today are not finding that. They're not finding this living water that our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ has for them. Let's go over a few pages to John chapter 6, verses 53. 3 through 56. Then Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man, and drink his blood, ye have no life in you. Whoso eateth my flesh, and drinketh my blood, hath eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. And my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. We know that we read this scripture many times when we're partaking of the sacrament. But it talks about here, you know, if we don't partake of the sacrament, it says that we have no life in us. But we have to understand what that represents when we partake of the sacrament. That when we do that, that we are remembering the covenant that we made with Jesus Christ. That covenant to follow after him. To follow him all the days of our life. And it's important what it says here in verse 56. It says, He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me. And I in him. What an important thing that is. That Jesus Christ is dwelling in us. And we are dwelling in him. We are part of him. He is part of us. He has promised to be there for us if we will follow after Him and serve Him. But we see so many people today who have lost their faith in Jesus Christ. They have turned their back on Him. Turned their back on Him. And there are many out there who never had a faith in Him. Never did. There's an article I found in the USA Today. It says, almost all denominations losing ground, survey says. And just a side note, on the same page in this paper, it says Obama reverses ban on stem cells. President signs order removing Bush administration curbs on stem cell research using human embryos. Then it shows a picture of him, the executive order. President Obama receives applause after allowing stem cell medical research, and everybody's clapping. We'll talk more about that a little later. But this article, these denominations are losing ground. It says faith is shifting, drifting, or vanishing outright. When it comes to religion, in the USA is now a land of freelancers. The percentage of people who call themselves some type of Christian has dropped more than 11% in a generation. The faithful has scattered out of their traditional bases. The Bible Belt is less Baptist. The Rust Belt is less Catholic. And everywhere, more people are exploring spiritual frontiers or falling off the faith map completely. These dramatic shifts in only 18 years are detailed in the new American Religious Identification Survey, the ARIS. And more than ever before, people are just making up their own stories of who they are. They say, I'm everything, I'm nothing. I believe in myself. Says Barry Kosman, survey co-author, among the key findings in the 2008 survey, so many Americans claim no religion at all, 15% up from 8% in 1990. From 8% to 15%, no religion at all. That category now outranks every other major U.S. religious group except Catholics and Baptists. In a nation that has long been mostly Christian, the challenge to Christianity does not come from other religions, but from a rejection of all forms of organized religion. Rejecting religion completely. The percentage of Muslims, while still slim, has doubled from 0.3% to 0.6%. Analysis within both groups suggests those numbers understate the group populations. Meanwhile, nearly 2.8 million people now identify with dozens of new religious movements, calling themselves Wiccan, pagan, and spiritualist, which the survey does not define. Wicca, a contemporary form of paganism that includes goddess worship and reverence for nature, has even made its way to Arlington National Cemetery, where the Pentagon now allows Wiccans 5-pointed star symbol to be used on veterans' gravestones. Cosman concluded that the 1990 data that many saw God as a personal hobby, and that the U.S. is a greenhouse for spiritual sprouts. A personal hobby. Not important, is it? Not important to them. Just a hobby. Something you do when you feel like it. Today, he says, religion has become more like a fashion statement, not a deep personal commitment for many. The ARAS research also led in quantifying and planting a label on the nuns. People who said none when asked the survey's basic question, what is your religious identity? The survey itself may have contributed to a higher rate of reporting as sociologists began analyzing the newly identified nuns. The nuns may have felt more free to step forward, less looked upon as outcasts after the ARIS results were published. Diane Muller of Austin, who grew up Methodist, says she's simply totally disengaged from the church and the Bible. Sunday mornings for her family mean playing in a park, not praying in a pew. Rossi says he's typical among his friends. If religion comes up, everyone at the table will start mocking it. I don't know anyone religious and hardly anyone spiritual. Don't blame secularism for driving up the percentage of Americans who say they have no religion. These people aren't secularized. They're not thinking about religion and rejecting it. They're not thinking about it at all. He expects a number of nuns to continue to grow as each generation begats more. Arfid Toth of Keene, New Hampshire, who is active in the Humanist Association of New Hampshire, says he never taught his three children anything more than the fantasy of Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. As far as Toth knows, none of his children, six grandchildren or four great-grandchildren, scattered from Utah to Rhode Island, has ever gone to church. I hope we understand the significance of this, of these things, and where we're at as a nation, and the signs of the times, and what is going on here. And I can assure you, many of these people that proclaim to be religious and have an affiliation, they're not going to church. They're not going to church. A decline, a gradual decline in religion, in faith, in beliefs. And as we see this decline, we also see people accepting more things that are evil and wicked, don't we? We can see them in them all the time. We can see where this nation is going. We can see where this world is going. We can see the beginning of some of these prophecies that will be fulfilled. Let's look at Matthew 24, 37 through 39. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Can we see that this is talking about today? This is the way it's going to be when the Son of Man returns. When Jesus Christ returns, this is going to be the conditions. And this is the conditions that this world is in today. Today. Is the return of Christ soon? It's soon. It's not very far off. These people are complacent, eating and drinking. These nuns, no religion, complacent. They're lost. Let's turn over to Messiah. Chapter 8, verses 61 through 65. This is on page 253. But behold, and fear, and tremble before God. For ye had ought to tremble, for the Lord redeemeth none such that rebelleth against him and dieth in their sins. Are these people rebelling against God? Yes, they're rebelling. They're rebelling against God. Yea, even all those that have perished in their sins. ever since the world began, that have willfully rebelled against God, that have known the commandments of God and would not keep them, these are they that have no part in the first resurrection. Therefore, had ye not ought to tremble, for salvation cometh to none such. For the Lord hath redeemed none such. Yea, neither can the Lord redeem such. For he cannot deny himself. For he cannot deny justice when it hath its claim. We see many of these things coming to pass in our day. Many of these things that we know are going to happen just before Christ's return. We can see so many people that are falling away from the Christian beliefs that this nation was established on. We are truly living in these last days. Let's turn over to 2 Timothy. Chapter 3, verses 1 through 5. This know also that in the last days perilous times shall come. Perilous times. Difficult times. Times that are full of danger. That's the day that we are living in. We are living in these perilous times. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such, turn away. We can see this list of things that it has, and we can see how prevalent these things are today. The proud and the covetous people, unthankful, unholy. These articles we're reading, the people are unholy, without natural affection. Very common today. And it's widely accepted by many people in the world. Despisers of those that are good. That is a warning to us. Because as time goes on, when we live a good and righteous life, we're going to find more people that are despising us and persecuting us. We need to be aware of that and be ready for it. Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. Kind of what America is about today, isn't it? Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. Religion as being kind of a hobby. Something that they do if they don't have anything else to do. Very common today. Another couple articles I have here that shows the trends of America today. All these articles were within about a week's time. This one was on the 19th, and the next one I'm going to read was on the 18th. This one says U.S. births set record, 40% out of wedlock. 40% of the births in America were out of wedlock. More babies were born in the United States in 2007 than any other year, and a wedding ban made increasingly little difference in the matter. The 4,317,000 births reported by the federal researchers Wednesday topped a record set in 1957 at the height of the World War II baby boom. Behind the boom is good and bad news. While it shows the U.S. population is more than replacing itself, the teen birth rate was up for the second year in a row. the birth rate rose slightly for women of all ages and births. Births to unwed mothers reached an all-time high of about 40%. Continuing a trend that started 3 years ago, more than three-quarters of the unwed mothers were 20 and older. For a variety of reasons, it has become more acceptable for women to have babies without a husband, said Duke University Philip Morgan, a leading fertility researcher. Morgan noted the pregnancy of Bristol Palin, the unmarried teen daughter of former GOP vice president candidate Sarah Palin. The young woman had a baby boy in December and plans for a wedding with the father Levi Johnston were scrapped. She's the poster child for what you do when you get pregnant now, Morgan said. Can we see this huge shift, this huge shift? There was a time, not very long ago, that this would have been frowned upon, wouldn't it? Frowned upon. People living together. Most of these people are probably living together out of marriage. Marriage is not important to them in the least. It means nothing to them. Nothing. Well, you can see why it would mean nothing to them when God means nothing to them. If God means nothing to them, why would marriage mean anything to them? That is the trend. That is where America is going. It is not good for this nation. This nation is supposed to be the example to the world. And we could go to, I'm sure you could go to some of these other countries in Europe and stuff, and you'd find that figure's higher than that, higher than 40%. They're ahead of us in their moral declines. But we are catching them. We are catching the world. Here's another one on the 19th, the 18th. U.S. to sign gay rights document. UN decree seeks to decriminalize gays. The Obama administration will endorse a UN declaration calling for the worldwide decriminalization of homosexuality that then-President George W. Bush had refused to sign, the Associated Press has learned. U.S. officials said Tuesday that they had notified the declaration's French sponsor that the administration wants to be added as a supporter. The Bush administration was criticized in December when it was the only Western government that refused to sign it. We were the only one at that time. We were still standing up a little bit. The move was made after an interagency review of the Bush administration's position on the non-binding document, which was signed by all 27 European Union members, as well as Japan, Australia, Mexico, and three dozen other countries. A worldwide thing. And now we are on board with this. The officials spoke on condition of anonymity because Congress was still being notified of the decision. They said the administration had decided to sign the declaration to demonstrate that the United States supports human rights for all. The United States is an outspoken defender of human rights and critic of human rights abuses around the world, one official said. In other words, in the words of the United States Supreme Court, the right to be free from criminalization on the basis of sexual orientation has been accepted as an integral part of human freedom. A shift, a shift. They're trying to decriminalize this, but we see what a crime is. When you look up crime in the dictionary, it's an offense, serious wrongdoing, or sin. That is what it is. It is a sin. It is breaking of a moral and divine law. And that's what the world is saying. this is no longer a sin. And the United States is agreeing. At least our new president is. And you'll find many supporters of this. Another thing that we're going to be persecuted for, not too far off, we're going to be persecuted for our stance against sin. Against sin. You know, we have the Bible in the Book of Mormon that gives us the commandments and the law. We have no right to change them. But that's what the world is trying to do. To make it fit their set of rules. Well, you can see how easy this is for them to do that when God is not part of their life. When God is not important to them. When religion is a hobby. It's easy for them to do, isn't it? You know, the scriptures tell us to put God first, doesn't it? Put God first and then love your neighbor as yourself. These people are putting God nowhere. Nowhere. A shift. Growing rapidly. These things are growing rapidly. It's very disturbing to see this. But we know it's coming. We know it's been prophesied of. Let's turn over to Ether, chapter 1, verses 31 to 35, page 717. And now we can behold the decrees of God concerning this land. That it is a land of promise, and whatsoever nation shall possess it shall serve God, or they shall be swept off when the fullness of his wrath shall come upon them. That day is not far off, is it? We were given this land, a land of promise, a choice land above all others. But there was a stipulation, wasn't there? There was a stipulation. There was a requirement. That was that we must serve God. We must serve God or we will be swept off. And the fullness of his wrath cometh upon them when they are ripened in iniquity. Ripened in iniquity. Are we close to that? I think we are. I think we're getting close. For behold, this is a land which is choice above all other lands. Wherefore, he that doth possess it shall serve God or shall be swept off, for it is the everlasting decrees of God. And it is not until the fullness of iniquity among the children of the land that they are swept off. The fullness of iniquity. Where are we with that? It is getting close, isn't it? We are getting close to that point, this nation. And this cometh unto you, O ye Gentiles, that ye may know the decrees of God, that ye may repent and not continue in your iniquities until the fullness be come, that ye may not bring down the fullness of the wrath of God upon you, as the inhabitants of the land hath hitherto done. Behold, this is a choice land, and whatsoever nation shall possess it, that is us, isn't it? We are possessing it. The United States shall be free from bondage and from captivity and from all other nations under heaven, if they will but serve the God of the land, which is Jesus Christ, which hath been manifested by them, which we have written. People would turn back to God. They would not be swept off, would they? That's the promise. That's the promise. Serve God and you not be swept off. but turn your back on God. And the scriptures are plain. They shall be swept off. Where is America at? How close are we to this day? I hope we can see that we are getting close. I hope we're aware. I hope we're aware of where we're at in the world, in time, in God's time frame. We don't know the exact day. We don't know the exact time. But we can see the signs. We know that we're getting close. We have to be aware. We have to be strong. We have to be strong. We are the example to the world. We're the example to this nation. But we have to be strong because as time goes on, we're going to be persecuted more. Are we ready for that? The day may come when I preach a sermon like this. There may be people standing out there picketing. I don't know what all. We have to be ready. We have to be strong. We can't be complacent. You know, Satan's out there trying to steal away the souls of mankind. And who do you think he's working on? Who do you think he's interested in more than anybody else? It's the people I'm talking to today. It's the people in this room. It's not these nuns. He's not worried about them. He could care less about them. He already has them. He wants us. He wants us. That's who he's going to try to steal away. So we need to be aware. We need to be strong. We need to be vigilant. We need to be dedicated to our service to the Lord. Matthew 24, 21 through 22. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Great tribulation. We are entering into those days. Entering into those days of great tribulation. We must be ready. We must be aware. You know, as we read these things, we know that this world will be gone someday, don't we? This world will be destroyed. But there's always those great promises for the righteous, for those that are willing to serve God. There is great promises. Let's look at 1 Nephi chapter 7. Verses 34 through 37. For the time soon cometh that the fullness of the wrath of God shall be poured out upon all the children of men. For he will not suffer that the wicked shall destroy the righteous. We may be persecuted, but God will not allow the wicked to destroy the righteous. We must remember that. We must remember who's going to be victorious in this battle. A battle between good and evil. Between God and Satan. That God will be victorious. And God will not allow us to be destroyed if we are faithful to Him. Wherefore, he will preserve the righteous by his power, even if it so be that the fullness of his wrath must come, and the righteous be preserved, even unto the destruction of their enemies by fire. Wherefore, the righteous need not fear, for thus saith the prophet, they shall be saved, even if it so be by fire. Did you hear the important point in that? The righteous need not fear. You know, we get disturbed about some of these things, don't we? That the way the world is going, that the evil in the world today, and the possibility of being persecuted more. But if we remain faithful, we will have God on our side. You know, I like that scripture in Matthew where it talks about that yoked together with Christ. That's one of my favorite scriptures. As long as we remain faithful and diligent in serving God, he will be yoked together with us, attached. He will be there with us to help us through these times of trial. The righteous need not fear. For thus saith the prophet, they shall be saved, even if it be by fire. The Lord will save those that are righteous. You know, here in these last 2 weeks, we've kind of had a plague or an epidemic go through this local, haven't we? How many of you had some variety of the flu in the last 2 weeks? Hold your hands up high. Look around. Most everyone in this room had the flu in the last couple of weeks. Not a pleasant thing, is it? Not a pleasant thing. You know, throwing up, for me, is probably the thing I like least in this life, is throwing up. And I have literally laid in my bed motionless for hours because I knew that if I even moved around a little bit, I would have to throw up. Now, I'd have probably been better off if I'd have thrown up, wouldn't I? I got that out of my system. But I have laid there for hours, motionless, so I would not have to go through this. And I tried that this time, too. It didn't work. It didn't work. I threw up time after time after time. But you know what? It makes me think. As much as I hate that, I despise it. You have no idea. Maybe you do. I despise that, to have to go through that. But you know what? Those that live a righteous life, someday we will never have to experience that again. Never have to experience it again. It will be past. I look forward to that day. We never have to experience it again. A good reason to serve God and to live a righteous life, that we'll never have to endure that again. Let's turn over to Revelation 20. I promised Jay I would preach less than 2 hours, and I'm going to hold to that. Revelation 20, 10, and then verses 14 and 15. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. In verse 14, and death and hell were cast into the lake and fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. This is what awaits the wicked. This is what they're going to have to endure. And it says that they shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. Will they have the stomach flu day and night forever and ever? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. You know, we think of this being a mental torment. But I'm sure whatever it is, whatever that torment is, that it will be worse than that stomach flu. It will be worse. Can you imagine such a thing? Can you imagine such a thing? To be tormented day and night forever and ever. But there's such great promise for the righteous. Chapter 21, verses 1 through 4. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. What a magnificent thing this must be. We can't even imagine what it looks like. Much grander than we can even imagine in our human minds. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying. Neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." What wonderful promises there are for the righteous, for those that are willing to serve God and endure to the end. But we must always be aware. Always be aware of where we're at, where this world is at. And be aware that Satan is out there trying to steal away our souls. We must be diligent. We must be diligent in our service to him. And it's my prayer that someday each one of us will be in this wonderful place that God has prepared. And that we will be able to dwell with him forever and ever. And that we will have no more pain and no more suffering. Thank you.